Hey, this is Matt Wellington.
And this is Lance Price. Welcome to the latest edition of Superbugs Unplugged.
So this episode, we're going to talk about the Animal Drug User Fee Act report, which compiles the sales of medically important and non-medically important antibiotics being sold to food animal production every year. And that comes from the Food and Drug Administration.
So one of the things that we should probably start talking about right away is, you know, what is this, when you say medically important versus non-medically important, what are you talking about?
Medically important, I don't know the specific term that the FDA uses, but it's a little different based on each country, I think. But basically, it's, are these antibiotics or classes of antibiotics considered important to human medicine? As in, do we need these to treat infections that we get? And, you know, what's the level of urgency behind that? So I know the World Health Organization has their own list, which is typically what we reference in our research and our outreach, because that does a really great job of separating out all of the different antibiotics and their kind of vulnerability right now for antibiotic resistance, and also how important they are to human medicine. You know, so at the top, they rate critically important to human medicine as the top line importance, and that means we really got to reserve those drugs, right? If we lose those drugs, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Right, and I think a lot of infectious disease docs would say that is a plastic list. That list evolves or should evolve as the bacteria evolves, and as we have new antibiotics come in, right? So those, the value of those drugs changes over time. But then, so non-important drugs would be like the ionophores, I guess, that they use in animal production for controlling certain diseases. This is a class of drugs that we don't use for treating infections in people, and so we would consider those non-medically important, right?
Right, yeah. And we refer to the World Health Organization list, I think, primarily for the reasons you just said. They update it fairly regularly, right? And it's a more comprehensive list. Whereas the Food and Drug Administration, I don't know when the last time they updated their list of medically important antibiotics was. It's been a long time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. So another thing we should address is therapeutic versus non-therapeutic. This is a point of contention and an important piece of this report, which I think they have wrong. So from in my mind, therapy is when I have a bacterial infection, I go to the doctor, they say, you have a bacterial infection, and they give me an antibiotic. Or if a veterinarian goes to a farm and says, this animal's sick, this animal has a bacterial infection, here's the right antibiotic for that animal. That's clearly therapeutic.
Right. And I think this is an important thing to note when we talk about overusing antibiotics in different settings, whether it's in human medicine versus animal production. And I think a lot of people play the blame game of who's overusing them the most. But for me, the crux is what you just described, that in human medicine, overuse is very rarely deliberate, right? I think doctors, sometimes they just don't know what the infection is. We need better diagnostic tools, whatever it might be. Overuse of antibiotics in the way you just described it in food animal production is systematic. It is deliberate. It's built into how we produce meat in this country, and it's something we can easily solve. So I think that, like you said, the FDA gets the definitions wrong across the board on this in a lot of ways. And that's why for us, when we talk about this issue, it's not therapeutic versus non-therapeutic. Our position is just we should only be using medically important antibiotics to treat sick animals and in limited circumstances to control a verified disease outbreak, right? So bottom line, disease has to be present and diagnosed on the farm by a veterinarian in order for antibiotics to be acceptably used. And I think that's an easier way to describe it to people in a way that hopefully clicks, much better than, you know, subtherapeutic or non-therapeutic or therapeutic, because everybody, like you said, that's a big point of contention. Everybody's got their own definition of what that means.
I think a good analogy for this non-therapeutic use or routine disease prevention is imagine a day school that said, hey, you know, our cleaning costs are just too high. Diapers are costing way too much. I think we're just going to start giving all these kids low doses of antibiotics in their food just to prevent them from getting sick, and we're just going to get rid of all that other stuff. Okay, with those couple of key definitions, let's wrap back to the report, and let's just talk about the meat of it.
The meat of it. Ah, love those puns. So, yes, there was a lot of really interesting info that came out of this year's ADUFA report. The top-line numbers that we're going to flesh out a little bit more, one is that sales of medically important antibiotics increased overall to livestock by 9% compared to last year. So from 2017 through 2018, sales increased by 9%. It's the first time that sales have increased since 2015, which is significant. And to break that down a bit more, so just over the course of the year, so this data has been coming out every year since 2009, and it's evolved over time. We have much more kind of granular data now for sales. But just generally, and this is in the report, you can take a look at a chart that shows the total sales each year from 2009 through 2018. And when you look at the trend, I think from 2009 until 2015, there were a couple years, maybe from 2010 to 2011, where it wasn't a huge increase. It was like fairly level. But for the most part, it's been going up from 2009 till 2015, sales of medically important antibiotics. What happened in 2015 that you think decreased the sales of medically important antibiotics? Because that was a really significant year, going from, I think, 2015 into 2016, sales dropped at least a decent amount, which was new, right?
Well, I would love to not have to speculate on this. Like, so in those earlier reports, we didn't have antibiotic use broken down by animal species. So this was one of the things that I went and asked for, you know, when I testified before Congress. Let's break it down by species so that we can see how things are changing in the individual sectors. So what we know from our work over the years is that antibiotic use in poultry production has really decreased over time. They've really embraced this idea of antibiotic stewardship due to consumer pressure. So that decrease over time could have been driven largely by the poultry industry. But we only started getting that species-specific data in the last couple of reports, and so we don't know what the trend is over time. It could have also been anticipation of new policies that were set to restrict antibiotic use for growth promotion, specifically the most egregious abuse of antibiotics known to man, probably,
yeah.
Right? Feeding animals antibiotics to make them grow faster or to make them use their feed more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Who knows why it was decreasing, but we saw this dramatic decrease. But what I found interesting was that about this report is that this is one of the first reports after the policy actually went into place, and now we're starting to see an uptick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the policies you mentioned from the FDA that were coming out around that time, I think the growth promotion was out, but of course we have our concerns about that because disease prevention is still allowed, and many of the classes of antibiotics that were used for growth promotion can still be used for disease prevention and in pretty much the same exact ways. So we definitely had some concerns about that. One thing I don't think you mentioned was part of the FDA policy is that there's more veterinary oversight in the farm. So to put antibiotics in feed, farmers need a VFD, a veterinary feed directive, which is kind of like a prescription. And there are definitely problems with that we can talk about. But I think it might have had a positive impact in farmers reining in some of their uses. Again, like you said, with the growth promotion, probably some of the most egregious uses. And so I think after that, a lot of folks sat back and kind of rested on their laurels. The FDA took some credit, which I think they deserve in some ways. But we are kind of just going from really terrible to just bad, you know, so I think we should really do some more work. And that's why, you know, we do what we do.
I would just jump in. I wouldn't say farmers. I mean, this is an industry. I mean, these farmers are really, most of these farmers are contract growers for these big, you know, in some cases, multinational corporations that tell them what to do. Right? And require that they use these antibiotics.
Yeah. I saw your 60 Minutes piece. I know you said that we're not protecting farmers. We're protecting the guy with the Maserati. that was a good one. So, no, that's right. So, I typically would say like meat producers, right? Producers producing a commodity, not your lovely family farm down the road like I have where I live. And they're great. But meat producers. So, I think the FDA policies had some positive effect probably, but it is really important to know that we're just going from really bad to bad. So some of the top line numbers from this year's ADUFA report, I think overall sales of medically important antibiotics increased to meat production by 9% important antibiotics. And when you break that down by species, 42% of the medically important drugs are going to cattle, 39% to swine, 11% to turkeys, and 4% to chickens. That is really striking when you compare the percentage that chicken producers account for versus some of the other ones like pork and cattle. And then some of the specific increases or decrease in the meats, sales increased 17% in this last report to pork production, so from 2017 through 2018. They also increased by 8% to cattle. And then this is the really striking part. They decreased by 17% to chicken producers. So this reinforces the story that we're seeing, you know, in a lot of different ways. And I see it in my own work when we talk to food companies, especially in their chicken, you know, sourcing, chicken producers drastically reducing antibiotic use. And that, again, is a signal for advocates like us to refocus our efforts, right? So clearly, we need to be shifting more of our focus towards advocating for reduced use in cattle and pork production. That is where the majority of the antibiotics are being sold. That's what the numbers are telling us. One of the things that is really useful with this data in the ADUFA report, especially the species-specific data now, is that we can compare what is happening in the U.S. to other countries, right? And you know specifics on that.
Yeah, so it's really important to scale antibiotic use for the size of production, so that we can compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges. And so in the EU, they always measure the amount of antibiotics per, you know, kilogram of meat produced. And so our friends at NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council, David Wallinga and Avi Carr, they did this nice analysis where they actually scaled American use. And they did it for the different animal species. Now we can do these direct comparisons, and it's really striking when you look at that. So we use in the United States per, you know, pound of meat, basically, we use 5 times as many antibiotics as the UK uses. We use 4.4 times as many antibiotics per pound of meat as Denmark uses. But then when you look at the individual animal species, it's really striking because Denmark, think about Denmark. Denmark's the fourth largest exporter of pork. So this is a country that's competing on a global market, right? So it's not just that these are clunking around. These are pampered pigs clunking around in wooden shoes. Oh, those would be Dutch, wouldn't they? Okay. These are not just pampered pigs. These are pigs that are raised efficiently to be sold on an international market. They're competing. And yet, they're using like 6.4 times less antibiotics in Denmark for their pigs as we use in the United States. Let me put that another way. We use 6.4 times as many antibiotics per pig as they do in Denmark. Why is that?
Well, I think it's unfortunately a fairly simple answer, right? We have prioritized a production system for pork and cattle, and chicken is actually making a lot of progress, but for pork especially, where it's built into the system that we overuse antibiotics because of the way the animals are raised, right? We are not taking the necessary precautions that they did in Denmark to cut down on antibiotic use and ensure that the animals or at least minimize the risk of the animals getting sick naturally, right? By reducing the stocking density and better, you know, hygiene practices. You've been there, so you might know more of the specifics than I do and how they actually did that. But you know, it's pretty simple. They changed their production system and how they raise the animals, and because of that, they use a lot less antibiotics.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously speculating, but I mean, I think it has to do with the commitment to public health. You know, when I go to Denmark and I talk to producers, you know, I talk to the farmers, I talk to the producers, I talk to the industry and the public health people, they're all sort of on the same page. Like, yeah, these are life-saving drugs. We need to use them as little as possible. We don't want to hurt our industry. You know, and so when they propose to eliminate all non-therapeutic use, and they define non-therapeutic as both growth promotion and routine disease prevention, the industry got their hackles up and they were scared and they said, oh, this could kill us. It could kill the industry, and pork is really important to Denmark. Their industry thrived afterwards. They just learned to adjust, right? So they learned to leave the piglets with the mom a little bit longer, right? They learned to increase the quality of the feed, to decrease the density of the animals. And their production has grown since the time that they eliminated all of these unnecessary antibiotics.
Right. I think it's commitment to public health. And you know, one of the things that we don't talk about probably often enough is that this isn't just a risk of the antibiotics no longer working to treat people, right? It's animals too. They're going to be in a big hole if they no longer have medically important antibiotics to treat sick animals in the same way that we are with human medicine. So there's another incentive for them to do the right thing on reducing use in that way.
That's such an important point. That's overblown, or not overblown, it's missed all the time. This is an animal welfare issue, right? If you blow out your drugs by using them to make animals grow faster, or just prevent these diseases that you're causing, when you have actual sick animals, you won't have the drugs to treat them because the bacteria will be resistant to those antibiotics. And so this is really an animal welfare issue. So yeah, this report does shed some important light on antibiotic use in food animals here in the United States, but we need more data. Two things would be especially helpful. One, we need to know what diseases they're trying to treat or prevent when they use these millions of pounds of antibiotics. Two, we need to know the duration of use. Is this every day for most of the animals' lives? Who knows? This information would be enormously helpful to developing more effective strategies for reducing unnecessary antibiotic use in food animal production, and it would probably lead to better animal health. But I think we've told you just about everything we can about the FDA report. We hope that you've found this useful and maybe even interesting. With that, I guess Matt and I will wrap things up. But before we sign off completely, we want to let you know about a new website that we've launched called antibioticsandyou.org. It's meant to be a resource during the cold and flu season, a time when patient demand for antibiotics is high, even though antibiotics won't actually help either of those conditions. Antibioticsandyou.org is super user-friendly. It has fun features such as a quiz on the types of infections that antibiotics will actually cure, myths versus facts, and true-false questions on every page. We really hope that you'll check it out. And again, that's antibioticsandyou.org. So I guess that's a wrap. Matt and I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Superbugs Unplugged. We really appreciate it, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm Laura Rogers, Deputy Director for ARAC. Now that you've listened to us, we'd love to hear from you. Please send any questions you have our way, and we'll do our best to answer them in future episodes. We'd also love to hear your ideas for topics you'd like us to cover in the coming months. You can reach us at superbugsunplugged@gmail.com. And one last thing. If you'd like to help us spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and ask your friends and colleagues to subscribe. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and every major listening app. We'll talk to you again next month.